This is RSVNB Update, episode 584, recorded Friday, September 9th, 2016. Removing the headphone jack. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for RSVNB Update. Just Sirion and myself here this week. Hello, friend.
Hi, Shane. How are you?
I'm good. It's certainly an interesting week. The first week of September is something that everyone looks forward to in the technology circle, and I think that's going to be our main point of discussion this week, given some of the changes to RS that, really don't seem that impactful, but we'll get to that in just a couple of moments. So, you guys probably realize I'm talking about the invention, augmentable pickaxes and the perks that came out with that. So, we'll get to that in just a minute. But aside from that, basically this week, we're just going to go through that, talk a little bit about the Solomon store stuff for September. RuneFest tickets are still available if anyone is in London or in the general UK area that hasn't decided that they want to go. You can still pick one up. And then some rather interesting tech news this week. So let's just jump right in with the Invention Mining augmentable pickaxe update. So Dragon and Crystal pickaxes are now augmentable, pretty much the same way you can augment anything else in Invention. You can, of course, now use your mining to gain Invention experience. So, well, the first thing that came to my mind when seeing this update was, oh, maybe, just maybe, this might displace automatic fishing at the Elven Waterfall as a faster way of Invention training. But unfortunately, it does not. We pretty much found that out, right?
Yeah, so if I understood correctly, the item XP is proportional to the actual skill XP you get. And 7 stones is less experience per hour than waterfall fishing is for fishing. So it is probably not going to be much faster unless you happen to be like 99 mining but not 99 fishing, or you happen to be have like bonuses like lava titans for mining that can boost you just over the fishing threshold. But generally, I think you're better off doing fishing anyway, because fishing automatics, you can actually disassemble them. And you probably don't want to disassemble your crystal hatchet, so you would have to stick with dragon hatchets.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is going to drop your item experience even lower. So I doubt a lot of people will switch to using mining as main training method. But if you are going for 99 mining, it's a nice bit of extra XP you can take.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that the core of it comes from the disassembly, as you mentioned. And it doesn't seem really that fair that fishing has a disassemblable tool that we can, you know, just create with Invention and then throw away right away, whereas mining and woodcutting do not. And, you know, I was thinking maybe that was something that should have been looked at.
Yeah, the skills, like, if you compare fishing and woodcutting and mining, they are different because there's, like, not a bronze fishing rod, iron fishing rod, steel fishing rod, etc. Like, a fishing rod is a fishing rod, period. That's one kind of tool. There's a crystal fishing rod if you want to have a bit more fish for some reason, but that's the tools don't scale, and in mining and woodcutting, they do. So Invention is going to work differently on that anyway.
So, I mean, see, there's just part of me that feels that maybe there should have been a way of disassembling, like some kind of Invention-related pickaxe or axe that we could have created with it. Like, or am I just wanting things to be equal when they necessarily shouldn't be?
So, all right, you want that, but that is going to devalue dragon pickaxes and their crystal variants as well. So you would have to make them really expensive anyway, or you would have to make them really bad.
All right. That is the problem. I see the point. And we also need to remember how rare dragon pickaxes were when they came out. So
they are still relatively really expensive.
Yeah.
If you compare them to dragon hatchets.
Nine mil.
Dragon hatchets are 1 mil, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So they are still a good source of money if you get them. And I think that is great. It's one of the few items that's holding up so well. So let's not devalue that.
That's a fair point. So also with this update came the faceted and clockwork components, which I guess you can get them, I'd imagine, from disassembling clockwork cats and other clockwork items. I'm not sure where the faceted components come from currently.
Faceted come from cut gems.
Oh, okay. So another sink for gems in the game. That's interesting. Yeah, all right. I'm not sure what these exactly create, but I'm sure they're related to these four new invention perks that were released this week with the update. So those include flanking, which have ranks 1 to 3, crystal shield, ranks 1 to 3, enhanced devoted, ranks 1 to 3, and enhanced efficient, ranks 1 to 3. So the flanking perk, when you attack your enemy from the behind or the side, you gain a 40% damage boost per rank, and backhand, binding shot, and impact also the following threshold abilities will no longer stun an enemy, but will instead receive a plus 15 damage boost per rank, forceful backhand, tight bindings, and deep impact. So that's interesting. They don't stun anymore.
It is, yeah. So that one is really interesting. I thought the flanking one was really interesting as well. But then you get the enhanced ones, and
What are you thinking?
I'm confusing too. Am I not? We're talking about the flanking one. Sorry.
Yeah, and I'm just wondering why this note here is in the flanking perk.
Yeah, so
removing the stuns from these combat abilities.
Because that's why I was confused, because I thought the attacking the enemy from the behind or the side is what we were talking about with flanking. So I feel this overcomplicates the perk.
Yeah, it does. All right, let's read this again. By attacking your enemy from behind or from the side, the following basic abilities will no longer stun an enemy, but will receive 40% damage boost per rank. All right. So, So if you have flanking, these no longer stun.
All right. And these are... I see. All right. This is really confusing.
It certainly is. And I don't think this helps anyone.
No. All right. Yeah. Sorry about that. Okay.
So the flanking perk effectively removes the stun from these abilities. Okay.
I mean, very, very interesting. I saw some people discussing this about bosses, which are basically a lot of big bosses are immune to stun. So
yes. This
would be good because especially in, say, Virago, you are very likely to stand behind or next to an enemy. Well, this can give you the damage boost, and to be honest, if you take this into account, you might want to change your abilities around. So, I don't know, could have an effect. It's a bit of a niche use.
Yeah, and plus, I think the point that I'd like to make with these is that if you're, you know, just doing General Slayer, there's no real purpose to use a stun because the things die so quickly. If you can just incorporate a damage boost instead with this perk and one of these abilities, that's going to be all the better to you.
I mean, there are some elite slayer monsters like rune dragons. They take a while to kill.
Yeah.
There, a stun could be useful.
I mean, a rank 3 flanking perk, we're looking at 120% plus damage based on this with this. With
yeah, the problem
with the
is
basic
with,
one.
With Slayer, you're not going to stand next or behind an enemy.
Exactly.
Maybe for your first hit, but then you need to make that ability hit on your first hit. And I know from trying to use Balanced Strike to heal myself doing Slayer tasks, this is not always easy because combat in this game isn't great.
Yeah, and that's what I was next going to bring up, because if you even try and, you know, duck behind someone and, you know, the NPC will eventually turn and face you. So
yeah, so
I think there's another motive behind bringing this in this week. We know that next week all the bosses are going to have their walking attacks removed, and Jagex is actually going to make all the bosses that had that as a mechanic actually be able to attack you if you stand underneath them. So I think that this might be kind of be related to these combat changes that are actually coming in next week.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. I can see that synergize really well with the flanking. So who knows, that would definitely show that Jagex is looking at these things in a whole, and I think talking about the combat council.
Yes, the combat council
looks at combat in general and looks at how these things combined, because right now sort of walking, I think we'll come back later, but the walking is basically using a combination of techniques and things that are in the game to, well, reduce the amount of damage you get. And
exactly,
RuneScape gets a new update every week, and combat is quite complicated. So every time you change something in combat and you let all the RuneScape players loosen it, they're gonna find combinations that work, maybe not as intended. So it's good that they have a group of people that looks at this, maybe tries things for themselves, but also keeps an eye on what the community is doing.
Yeah, and I mean, we'll talk more about this next week, but essentially what's happening is if you go to Araxor and you stand underneath Araxor and find ways to deal with its attack when you're close to it, you can effectively negate some of the damage it's doing. But come next week, you stand under Araxor, it will be able to attack you, whether or not you're right next to it, under it, or far away from it. So those are some of the changes that are coming next week, and just the very fact that the Combat Council is putting something like this in-game kind of restores my faith in the fact that Jagex is looking at the evolution of combat, because sometimes it doesn't feel that way, right? But with an update like this, it kind of is pushing us in the right direction.
Yeah, it is. It's definitely interesting as well what this Combat Council is going to do once PvP is going to get
exactly
bigger in the game. Like, what's the Combat Council going to change? And there might be some pretty big changes to make EOC really that big again.
Yeah, so we'll have to pay attention to that next week. Following from this, the next perk is Crystal Shield. It's a defensive perk that works in two phases. The first phase provides a 10% chance to activate whenever you take damage, and once this is active, 5% per rank, up to 15% of any damage that you sustain is stored for 10 seconds, and once the 10 seconds have elapsed, you'll be given a secondary pool of HP equal to the damage you have sustained, and this lasts for up to 30 seconds or until the shield is depleted. So yeah, in a way, it's temporary hit points.
Yeah, so Derek has a way of explaining these things in a really complicated way, I feel. It's basically you have a chance of absorbing damage for a while, and then you release it.
Indeed.
Is it right?
Yeah, and, well, there no, you don't release it. That's what the ability did with that came from God Wars Dungeon 2. That absorb damage and then releases just storing it and using it for your own HP.
Yeah, so you absorb all the damage, and then basically that gets applied to you as armor.
Yep, temporary. There.
So that's a reduced
amount, of course.
Yeah, so that's... All right, that's the explanation of this perk. I like it. I just don't like the fact that they need 3 paragraphs to explain it.
Yeah, that's true. Also, a fun fact, this includes any self-inflicted damage through nitroglycerin, Zamorak Bruise, or ancient combat abilities.
Cool.
So there's a potential that you could have this proc when you're using the ancient combat abilities and getting temporary HP off it. Mm-hmm. Very neat. Enhanced Devoted, basically an upgraded version of the current Devoted perk, 3% chance per rank on being hit that Protection Prayers will work at 100% effectiveness for 3 seconds.
All right.
And
so,
then the enhanced version pushes it up to 4.5% per rank. So that's not very, that's not a very large increase.
All right. So let me get this straight. When Jagex was working on Invention, they said they had lots and lots and lots of ideas for perks, right?
That's correct.
And now we get 4 new perks, 2 of which are enhanced versions of what we already have. I don't get it.
I'm just trying to figure out why the need to go up from 3% to 4.5%. And when you basically split that out, that's an extra 4.5% chance at rank 3 compared to what you previously would have been. And I can see why this is low, because you don't necessarily want the Protection Prayers always working at 100% efficiency. But to devote a paragraph to this week's update here, the other two are certainly more interesting than this.
Yeah, so I... Jagex was all, oh, we're going to have so much potential for invention rewards, invention perks, invention, like new devices. There was so much room for invention. And what do we see? We haven't seen a quest yet with any invention rewards. I don't think we have an activity yet with invention rewards.
I don't think we'll see an invention quest well into 2018 based on the way you need to get into that skill, you know, 3 level 80s and then lots of XP training. So,
and then now perks are being sort of repeated, and I do not know if Jagex is really taking the full potential out of invention like they promised. It feels like they've sort of given up on it.
Well, we don't know what they have planned for the rest of the year, and they said Invention would take a full year to roll out, so we could wait and see.
I mean, I don't want to be a doomsayer here or anything. I still believe that Invention has very big potential, but if we say 4 new perks, I only see 2.
All right, well, let's look at Enhanced Efficient then. Basically, the current version reduces charge by 6% per rank, and this goes up to 9% per rank, allows you to save a maximum of 27% charge drain.
Yeah. So this is quite substantial, but from what I understand, you need the new components, the clockwork components.
Yeah, you would.
In particular. And those are really, really rare and really difficult to get. So are you going to save enough energy to get out of the cost of the clockwork components? I don't know. Maybe if you're really lucky and get your enhanced efficient rank 3 after a few tries. But I don't know if this will be used a lot.
I don't know.
It also takes up both slots in a gizmo. That is should be added.
Yeah, both of these do. You know, I think that... I think that this perk is not going to be a must-have unless you are actually looking for, you know, purchasing energy. Whereas if you gather your own, you probably don't care about that.
So you said the Devoted, right? The Enhanced Devoted. You didn't know if you thought the extra 4.5% chance was worth it?
Yeah, that's right.
Also keep in mind that you are sacrificing a second gizmo slot.
That's right.
Like, you could combine the normal Devoted with something else and then have, like, more space for other gizmos. Enhanced Devoted is not going to give you that.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I can see where there would be reason to have these, but I think it all comes down to opportunity cost and whether or not you're going to be finding ways of training that you can use perks that are better than Enhanced Devoted and Enhanced Efficient.
Mm.
So that's what this is ultimately going to come down to. And I think the real story of this update is in the Crystal Shield and the flanking perk, because as it is right now, you know, the only reason you would use a crystal or dragon pickaxe augmented is if you are training mining to level 99 and you want to train invention along the way. Because anyone who is out to train invention efficiently will do fishing. So there's a story with those. There's also some quality of life changes with invention just generally this week. For example, the mechanized chinchampa, you will now make 50 of these at a time instead of 5. The book switcher, when making a book switcher, enhanced components are no longer required. Calorie bomb no longer requires direct components when being made, and healing on monsters with the calorie bomb has been reduced by 5%. The auto sanctifier now has only one pious component needed for the production, down from 8. And when created, the auto sanctifier will now come from 50 charges. And if you had any in your bank that had 40 without being used, they will be automatically upgraded to you. Or rather, if you had 10, they will be automatically upgraded to 50. Dungeoneering Party Simulator, the number of evasive components needed to create this device has been reduced to 1. The electrified trap, stunning components down to 1. And the stunning, or the electrified trap now comes with 25 charges. And the Dungeoneering Lock Melter, only 2 ethereal components will be required for this production of the item, down from 5. So, generally right. Reducing the cost of these. And I think that's what we said when this update came out, is that the cost for creating all these perks was, devices, was a little bit expensive.
I mean, I never heard of somebody really using any of the new items. So, I suppose that it was necessary. It's a bit surprising it took so long for these to be changed, but... maybe Jagex wanted to look at long-term usage.
Yeah, you need to look at these long-term, considering, you know, items and the economy all linked together and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So, alrighty. I think that's about it for this week's headlining update, invention, perks, and pickaxes. So unless there's anything else, I think we should move on to the patch notes, which this week are really thin. I know you did find... something in them that was interesting and worth mentioning. So what's that?
So disassembling and siphoning items will now count towards the invention harmony pillars, capping at 50k experience per action. So it means that if you have an invention harmony pillar, you can now actually get the experience from disassembling and siphoning, which is, I think, how most people train invention. So yeah. It only makes sense. And I can see why it's capped at 50k, because otherwise you would disassemble, and if you have 4 pillars on invention, you would max them out all straight away. So,
yeah, and I mean, I'm sure there's also probably a technical reason for this behind the scenes as well. So, though, does anyone use the Harmony pillars anymore? Like,
I have them planted all the time, and whenever I see them being grown, I pick them and then wait for a skill that's reasonable, easy to train. And yeah.
All right. Fair enough.
But I have all the harmony mods I ever need, I think. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I just wish that potion was tradable, because that's great XP at the end, because I have all these crystal blossoms and I don't need that many perfect plus potions. But.
Well, the crystal blossoms is from the. Crystal tree you plant at the Tower of Voices.
That's right.
Yeah, so that's a different potion. Harmony Moss is actually tradable, but its value dropped straight away because of the completionist's requirement of picking like 500.
Of course. Alrighty. Apparently also aggression and camouflage potions no longer lose their effects when logging out, so they persist like all the other potions in-game now. So this week's Treasure Hunter promotion, Beyond the Ark.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, we're already looking forward to the Ark in October, aren't we?
Yeah. Yeah.
So from the 8th until the 12th of September, each time you use a Treasure Hunter key, you complete part of a voyage. And once you make it to the end of, I guess... your voyage, you unlock a new piece of level 70 hybrid armor. It's called the High Armor of Hanto, and it's three corresponding weapons, including a fantastic long-reach melee halberd. So this is level 70 gear, unlockable from Treasure Hunter. You need to visit every island on each of the eight maps to complete a voyage, and then receive a piece of armor. So that's, and each island each map has five islands to visit. Sorry about that. So that gives you a total of 40 keys that you're going to need to unlock to get one piece of armor.
Yeah. So as far as microtransaction promotions go, this is quite ridiculous, isn't it?
Yeah, and you got to complete eight voyages to net you all the piece of the armor and its three weapons.
Yeah.
So with that being said, that's 320 keys.
All right. Let's look up. Right, how much does that cost? I want to know now.
All right.
Shop. There we go. Continue to store.
Bonds are currently 12 million. So if we factor that into the equation here, I believe you get, let's see, how many keys do you get per bond? You get 15 Treasure Hunter keys. So we said 320 keys, yeah? So if you get 15 per, that means that you need 21 bonds, and that's 12 million GP each. So 21 times 12, that's 252 million for this piece of armor if you wanted to buy it in-game with in-game bond currency.
All right, so I can't seem to be able to get to the store, which is a shame. All right, let me do it like this way. Let me just try and get some membership, because I know that gets me to the store. So 320 keys. How much is...
I think that's around $20, if I remember correctly.
All right. Let me get back.
Select I'm not 100% sure, but it sounds $20.
Select the package. Why is this website so slow? Treasure Hunter keys. There we go. Treasure Hunter keys. All right, so you need 320.
That's correct.
So you can get them in two packs of 200.
All right.
So 200 would cost me £35. And 450 would cost me £70. So let's say the actual price for this armor is about £50.
That's pretty expensive.
£50. All right. How much does your average armor cost?
I have no idea. Like what kind of armor?
In Solomon's store.
I haven't.
For 420 rune coins, I think you can get a nice set. That's £7.
All right. So basically, what we're saying is that this has a huge markup of by like I don't know like 500%.
Yeah.
700%.
All right, let's be honest. You get like tier 70 hybrid armor, which the only other tier 70 hybrid armor we have is the War Priest sets.
That's right.
You get all the rewards you get from the Treasure Hunter key chests anyway. So it's not that it's no value at all, but who would spend £50? So that would be about $70, I think. $70 of keys in one weekend. That's a lot of money.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess what I'm going to say, thankfully, there's no, there's nothing really overpowered here about this armor. It's just, you know, flat up tier 70 hybrid armor. So it's not, you know, some benefit that we don't already have in game or that we, you know, couldn't get a better version of elsewhere in game for playing the content. And I think that's got to be the one thing that we are looking up at about this promotion.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know.
If you want to go for this, don't get me wrong, go for it. I no judgments here. I just don't think this is a reasonable promotion by Jagex itself. I think there's not a lot of people who get keys to get your armor set.
Yeah. And I mean, when you think about it, if anyone is using logic and sees that, you know, this isn't necessarily a great piece of armor, then they might not actually purchase it. But we don't have access to the treasure hunter numbers, so we can't say about that.
Yeah. I mean, we say 320 keys, factor in some free daily keys from, like, logging in, doing daily challenges, maybe even doing some quests. Then there is the tokens you can win that actually let you skip a set of five islands. So you can probably tone down the costs. But still, it's...
Yeah. And, you know, I think the tokens, like you said, being able to skip a set of islands helps as well. But
yeah. Anyway. I mean, I think it would be an interesting discussion to talk about. Is it really necessary to have microtransaction promotions every week? Because this is not unique, but let's not go into that right now.
Yeah, and I mean, I can honestly tell you that Star Trek Online doesn't have microtransaction promotions every week. But at the same time, if you want to be competitive in Endgame, you pretty much need to buy a ship that's going to run you $25 to $30. But you only need to buy one of them throughout your entire progression. So
yeah,
there's that.
I mean,
it's a question of whether or not you want to have a one-time huge investment of $25 to $30, or if you want to have these weekly promotions that are relatively benign.
Yeah, but Star Trek Online doesn't have its subscription model where you pay a monthly fee, and RuneScape has that already.
That's right.
And microtransactions come on top of that. Like, you're a member, you're paying for a product, not a high price, I'll admit that, but you're paying monthly for a product, and still you get all these promotions in your face. That's slightly bothering me.
All right, and that's fair. I can see that. And I mean, like I tell everyone else, it's a question of, you know, if this is, you know, providing aspects to develop, say, a new quest, or maybe the NXT client used resources that came in from microtransactions, and I think ultimately that's a good thing at the end of the day, because just look at the NXT client and how gorgeous that is.
I mean, I am very much aware that Jarex is probably partially still alive because of these microtransactions. I think they make a big part of their income.
Oh yeah, yeah, it's and, definitely a major model today for any game.
I'm happy that it helps them continue to make great content. I do not think that I am wrong in not liking those things to be put in my face, though.
So. Yeah, you're entirely allowed to have that opinion. So,
All right.
Let's talk about the Solomon Store September sales. It's some things on sale here. I don't know if there's any that are catching your eye, but I will tell everyone that for the month of September, the free members item is the deep sea fishing animation. So if you have not got that before, you can pick that up for free this month on the store. We also got some items from the loyalty shop on sale. Big Wig title, 70% off. Legendary Green Fingers Aura, that's 40% off. That's 71,000 loyalty points off. Supreme Corruption Aura, 40% off. Serene Gaze Aura, 50% off. Blazing Gaze, 60% off. And then some titles that are on sale as well.
So these are not off the entire month. They are often like in weekly increments. But Jagex does not tell us what item is on sale what week. So you have to check regularly.
Yeah. The Zarosian Teleport is on sale in the actual Solomon store with rune coins. Let's see. Anything else here jump out at you that's on sale in the actual store itself?
The Dwarf and War Suit was pretty big when it came out. One of the first items.
All right. Flaming Skull, that member's item from a number of years ago.
Yeah,
not much else that's jumping out.
The Ariane pack, I think I got that, actually.
Oh, interesting.
I got that for my free rune coins from years back.
Yeah, I got the Zaros pack with mine. But All right. Well, there's the sales for September. So if any of these pique your fancy, just have a look at the Solomon store regularly. All right. Behind the scenes. RuneFest 2016. Tickets are still available if anyone is looking for an excursion in London next weekend. I personally am not going, but if anyone out there is in the UK and you want to go, you might as well go pick up one of these tickets, because oddly, previous RuneFest has sold out quickly, but tickets are still around for this. So it looks like an interesting venue this year.
I am not sure if I did this on the show, but I totally called that Jerex would not sell out RuneFest this year.
And the reasoning for it?
The reasoning was mostly that Jerex this year was really, really late in announcing the date.
And yeah, it was less than 2 months.
And the date was also really early. So
middle of the month.
I personally was really looking forward to going. I was counting on going because I had most of my October kept clear for this. And then the announcement didn't come. And it didn't come. And there were some dates starting to be filled in at the end of October, and the date still didn't come. I was getting worried. And then it was moved to halfway September, exactly in the weekend I would be visiting family in a different country. So, yeah, I could see that happening all across people. Like, I know a group of people that wanted to go and just can't, because the whole thing fell in a completely different time from what was expected, and it was also really, really late. So normally the date is announced, what would it be like?
It was normally announced in June or July.
And that's 4 months in advance at least. And now it was like barely two, if I remember correctly. And what you have to realize is that flight prices and hotel prices go up.
Yes, as you get closer to the date.
Like, if you want to get good flight prices, you have to book basically half a year in advance.
Mm-hmm.
And that option was also not possible right now. So I think Jagger shot themselves in the foot here. And I think something went weird, because the bond thing also was shut down. There was another reason.
That's weird, but...
A lot of people, I think, were counting on going to RuneFest using bonds. I've spoken to people who were like planning on going to RuneFest by bonds, and then they weren't able to, so they didn't go. That's another reason. A lot less people are able to go to RuneFest because they don't have the money. So that were two reasons together. I thought RuneFest is probably not going to sell out this year. I called it. It's still not sold out, and that might have some consequences for Jagex, actually.
Yeah, and I mean, when you think about it, whatever they do with this, it has to turn a profit. Because if RuneFest itself doesn't turn a profit, I mean, what is the point of bringing everyone out when you can effectively do what you do at RuneFest with something like the Summer Summit live stream?
Mm-hmm.
So,
I mean, RuneFest is a community event.
Yes.
And
I think it's great.
I think as game publisher, developer, what are they? As game company, it is so important to keep the community events alive, because if you are going to RuneFest and meet people in real life and become friends, you all of a sudden have a huge investment into RuneScape. You are not going to quit RuneScape if you physically have met people that play it. You're a lot more likely to keep playing it.
Yeah, or I mean, you guys could all quit together and go do something else, right?
Yeah, true, but that's a lot less likely to happen. But so these community events, they are important. This year they have like all these streamers and YouTubers there as well. They have their own little fan base. Those might be coming to the community event as well. Get introduced, like, other concepts of RuneScape. There is so much going on during an event like this. It's not just, like, people having a good time, but there's certain triggers being hit at people that makes them more invested in RuneScape. And that's good.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that it all comes down to timing this year. And if it had been announced a couple months earlier, we would have seen it sell out.
The bonds thing might still have made it really close, though. But yeah, it would definitely have improved the ticket sales, I think.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I hope and I think it's still going to be a success regardless of how many tickets sell. It's just a question of what it looks like at the end of the day, and I hope it'll still look good enough, but unfortunately we will be in no position to know that.
Yeah. I mean, alternatively, maybe the venue has space for a lot more people. Maybe that's the reason they're not selling out.
Maybe.
We don't know. We don't have the numbers, but I find it unlikely.
Another thing mentioned in this behind the scene is that RuneScape is almost at 250 million accounts created. Apparently on Monday we're going to find out more about how this will be celebrated in-game. I remember the 200 million, and they had a huge YouTube promotion for that.
So 250 million accounts, right?
That's correct.
So the fourth most populated country is Indonesia, with 256 million people.
Right.
So this is roughly one account made for every person in Indonesia, and that's the fourth most populated country in the world. So this is a big, big number.
Yeah, it is. And like, I mean, I just hope that a good number of these are still playing or still active. That would be another interesting number, I think, to see how many of these have logged in the last year or the last 2 years.
Yeah. But, I mean, sure. We're talking about accounts created that includes alts and all that stuff, but it's a big number.
Yeah, it is, and it really just shows, you know, the position that RuneScape holds in the modern gaming society, I think. I think you can go up to practically anyone, and there's going to be very few people who have not heard of or played RuneScape in their past, whether it be, you know, back when RS2 first came out and it was that shitty Java game that everyone, you know, liked to laugh at and everything, or if it was RS Classic and they've been there ever since, or, you know, they just started recently. And you show someone who started way back when about what NXT looks like and they're completely blown away. And I think that is the story that needs to be told about RuneScape is it's this brand, this company, and this community that has endured for, what is it now, you know, 15 years, and 250 million accounts later, there's still new accounts being created. There's still people coming back, talking to people who they talked to, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10 years ago, and it is just something that binds people together. It almost binds people together as well as Star Trek binds people together. And I think that in the, you know, the from a global perspective, I think that RuneScape doesn't get enough credit for the community it has. Sure, there are certain parts of the RS community that are toxic and, you know, should generally be avoided, but every game has those. And I think in general, just like in the real world, that the vast majority of people who play RS are good people and you can get along with quite well. And it's just a matter of talking to them and engaging them and figuring out what about this game keeps them coming back. And I think that as community stewards, you with Clan Quest and me with this podcast and RSBNB, we have a valuable role to play going forward in keeping the community going. So yeah, that's my stance on 250 million RS accounts. And, you know, it's a huge accomplishment by Jagex. And I mean, World of Warcraft is, you know, much more hyped and everything, but I don't think anything can match RuneScape's charm. But anyways, more on this next week, I guess, when 250 million accounts gets passed. Let's see, what are we at right now? Let's go to the homepage and have a look here. All right, continue to full website. Not sure why we've got the splash page. We're at 249,951,232. So, definitely getting up there.
Sounds good.
Yep. Well, I believe that's it for RS updates this week. 250 million accounts on the way and a great community to go with it. So, you ready to move on to our question for the week?
Go for it.
All right, this is from the RR Man. Hey guys, first off, I wanted to tell Sirion to be careful, because it's starting to sound like he treats the game as a job. And as we all know, that's the way to hit a burnout. Look at me, for example. I didn't go to the beach event once, and the world's still spinning. Do you guys think that these latest events feel less microtransaction-y? Look at the crabs, for example. Don't need to pay anything. That's crazy. And have you guys heard of or played Elite Dangerous? It's a fantastic space game. I think Shane would love it. Cheers, the RR Man. So what do you feel about treating RS like a job? You think you go a little bit too far sometimes?
Yeah, definitely go too far sometimes, especially in the community management part. But yeah, I can see where he is referring to. It's what we talked about last week, where Jerix is having this way of making you feel like you should log in every day and do something. And it is a bit like a job, because it's a chore every day. Check your treasure map, it's check your keys, check the beach, check craplet plunder, check I'm missing probably a few things. And yeah, it is getting a bit feeling like a job, and I totally accept that maybe I should get out of the mindset and just don't really care about these things anymore. But yeah, dailies used to be running around Gileanor getting the free items, and now it's getting all these promotions done. So it's a combination, I feel, with where Jerix is pushing the game into this chore-like thing, and people like me who feel they should do these things because otherwise they might miss out. So I'll keep it in mind. I finished with the beach by now, so it's also gonna go away soon.
Yeah.
So let's forget about that. I got my outfit. I'm happy. Well, not really happy. I don't like the outfit, but but yeah, I see the point. So thank you. No taken.
Yeah, and I mean, like with regards to the beach, I only went, you know, once or maybe twice, and that was in the first week. I never went back. It's certainly something that didn't really appeal to me last year, and it didn't appeal this year, so I didn't see a need to, you know, shift my entire RS playing XP for it. So I'm with the RR Man here that I, you know, I just went to the beach to check it out initially, see what was new this year, and then moved on. So, and you know, that's the number one thing I need to tell people, I think, to do is that, you know, you can't let RS control your playstyle. You need to control your own playstyle on RS, being that, you know, you don't necessarily need to do all the daily events. You just need to do the ones that you want to do. And sometimes you don't even need to do any, depending on how you feel. Don't feel like you need to do things in game.
I think it's a great way of looking at it. I wish I could. I really do. But I also feel that Jerix is sort of pushing away from that. It's like, hey, there's this promotion. It's only here for a month. Has amazing rewards. Make sure to check in every day. And they bring forward this in such a way that you sort of feel compelled to look at it and to participate in it. So is that unhealthy for the game? It might actually be, because it's going to burn people out checking all these promotions. I agree that I sort of want to go back to the game and play it the way I want to, and somehow these promotions prevent me from fully enjoying the vanilla experience of the game. And that is why I think that Jerix should tone down with these promotions. They should let everybody enjoy the game in their own vanilla way again. So, yeah.
All right.
I think I had a good point on that last week. So,
All right, that's fair enough. Yeah, definitely the crabs feel less microtransaction-y. The free key was, you know, a way of getting everyone into the treasure hunter thing without needing to pay for it, which was great. And, you know, I think that compared to what we had earlier in the year, and you look at Crablet Plunder and then the map, that is definitely less microtransaction-y. And I think that JX heard the players on that, and there's some fair discussion that went on, you know, in the first half of the year about the fact that every week there was something that felt like you needed to maybe, you know, spend loyalty points or spend rune coins on or real money to complete. But we haven't seen any of that in July, August, or September so far, which I think is
great. This is sort of offset by the Beyond the Arc promotion.
Let's just forget about that one.
So,
because that's just, you know, vanilla treasure hunter and a tier 70 piece of hybrid armor that we almost always have.
I mean, the beach has had the option to buy the rewards with rune coins.
Yeah. But, so, I mean, I think you could complete that without...
Definitely.
Without using rune coins.
And they're tradable as well, so...
Yeah, there you go. But yeah, I definitely agree with that assessment, and I think that's going to make a lot of people happy.
Yeah, I still think that we don't need a treasure hunter promotion every week. I still don't think we need new Solomon stuff almost every week either. So I still think there's room for improvement, but it's definitely not as bad as it was earlier this year.
What would you go down to optimally for how many treasure hunter promotions would you have a month?
One, two, not more than that, definitely.
Yeah, okay.
Like if you do one or two...
I think two would be fine.
Two would be fine. But then you could also run one for longer than a single weekend.
Mm-hmm.
One for an entire week. Because I am a bit detached from the game, because I have a job now. I come back home in the evening, and then I log in to play the game. I'm not at home anymore reading all the updates whenever they come out. So I come in and I see the treasure hunter interface changed again and again and again. It's so hard to keep up with all these promotions, and there's so much going on. I think that should be toned down a bit. Like, if there's only one every 2 weeks or so, then it's worth reading up on.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess the question that follows from this is, would you be willing to pay a premium membership fee to have less of these?
Well, I don't know. It's weird, because you would then pay a premium membership to not get beneficial items, because the items that come from the promotions are better than the items you get normally. Generally, it's just there's always something happening, and that is distracting.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, have you heard of our played Elite Dangerous?
I have currently 27 hours in the game, and that is only a tiny, tiny bit compared to how big the game is.
I think
it's really, really awesome. It is, of all the games that I have played, it is one of the most polished ones, but it also feels very, very realistic in a way. So there's the Kerbal Space Program realistic, where there's all the physics stuff and all going on. It's not that. You fly in a spaceship. You don't have to worry about physics. You can jump between star systems. It has that arcade factor still. But there is this, like, the ships handle in a way that I would expect things which are, like, from, I think it plays in the 34th century. So ships of that time, it feels like that. They handle like it. And the whole way of interacting with the world, like going to space stations, docking with space stations, there's a lot of communication going on. And getting rich in the game is sometimes a bit grinding, but it is also very realistic. There is a good economical model. The flight controls are great. The worlds are great. The DLC model is very, very fair, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's an amazing game. And I just play it when I feel like I need a relaxing game to play. I just like haul some cargo between stations, get rich, do some exploring. It's a lot of fun, and it's really well supported as well for like game controllers, but also those advanced flight joysticks work great with the game. And it's even VR enabled, so it's definitely worth checking out. It's the price is a bit steep to just get into it.
How much are we looking at?
Let me check how much the base game costs right now. So the base game currently costs £20. That's all right, actually. But then if you look like at the season pass, so they work with yearly season passes that gives you all the updates of that year.
Uh-huh.
But if you don't buy the season pass, you still get part of the update as like free updates. So season pass for year also is £20. So you're looking at $25 or so.
For a year? I mean that's basically, that's still less than, you know, one AAA game title per year, and you're basically just putting into this.
And the game currently does not involve a lot of microtransactions. I think you can buy skins for your ship. That's about it. But otherwise, you get the full experience. It is. The game is very realistic, I think it makes it a lot of fun. And I just enjoy flying around in a universe that feels real. Like, it feels like this is how the galaxy, I think it's the Milky Way, could look in the 34th century. It is actually based on astronomical data that we have collected.
Yeah, I'm just looking at some of the pages here, and there's a system that's Jilis 293b, which is an actual star. Yeah. So
all the stars that are known are in there. There are some more in there as well to just fill it up a bit, of course. But yeah, all the existing things are there. The planets, as much as possible, are accurate. You can actually visit Earth. It's there.
It's still around in the 34th century. That's amazing.
Yeah, it is. So it's a lot of fun. The graphics are great. I definitely check it out if you're into space games. It's so much fun.
Does it have full 3D space controls?
Yeah. Yeah. That's the fun part. Like, a lot of space games try to make things simple by keeping everything in the plane. There's no such thing in this game. It's confusing at start, but that is what makes it so cool. It is realistic.
That would have to be my number one complaint about Star Trek Online, is that it's planar.
Yeah, and this isn't. And I am, every time I play, I'm so impressed, and I get lost in it because I feel like somebody who is just like flying around a universe making money. And like, the entire interface, the entire user interface is in game. Like, it's all holographic display, so it feels like you're actually in there. And that's why this game would probably be amazing in VR.
Yeah, but you got to have the hardware to use it. Otherwise, you're going to have motion sickness.
Because
they actually have a made for VR page here. Designed from the ground up to support virtual reality technology.
Yeah. And they're keeping to update this game, so I'm sure it will be around for at least a couple of more years. They have amazing new things planned for this year as well. And I'm really looking forward in what they're going to do in making this more interesting to play in co-op, because that is limited still, but yeah.
Yeah, I might have a look at it. Star Trek Online and RS and Overwatch pretty much consume all the gaming time currently. So, I mean, there's not much time for a huge investment in much else. So,
I mean, it goes on sale every now and then. It's worth picking it up. If you're really looking for like an action-y space game, don't go for this, because as I said, it's quite realistic. So fighting is going to be expensive, because if you lose your ship, well, you lose it. So, it's a bit of a grinding thing as well sometimes, and maybe that's the only part of the game that is the bad part. There's no real story. It's really open world, but I like that about it. So
apparently they have a version for macOS as well.
Yeah, so the sad thing is that some of the content of the new season pass, Horizons, includes planetary landings, so you can actually explore planets as long as they don't have an atmosphere. But that requires certain shader features, and because Apple is not great at keeping their OpenGL shaders up to date, they are literally physically unable to release this on Mac without taking a huge penalty hit. And even to release it with that penalty hit, they would have to rewrite a large part of their rendering. So there is an OS X 10 version, but you might not want to hold off of the season pass.
Yeah, I would definitely play it on Windows if that would be the case. But
yeah.
All right, well, that looks good. Nice little recommendation from the RR Matt there for a space game. I will look for it next time it goes on sale, perhaps. All right, well, speaking of Apple, we do have some other Apple stuff to discuss. But first, if you guys do want to send in a question like the RR Man did, you can leave us a voicemail or a text message at our phone number, which is 571-572-2632, or better remembered as 571-57BNB. We also have the email address, questions@rsbnb.com, or you can leave us a direct message on Twitter at rsbnb. All right, so early September, Apple event, a yearly occurrence, new Apple iPhones, AirPods, and an Apple Watch update this year. So, the iPhone 7 already causing controversy before it's being released, but nonetheless, I can say with fair certainty that the iPhone 7 will do better than the Note 7 did, for the pure reason that it will not explode. Going back to last week's tech news. And, you know, it's really quite shocking that I have to make that comparison, that an Apple device will do well, you know, just on the fact that its competitor phone that came out last month is exploding and setting people's cars and houses on fire. So, with that being said, let's discuss a bit about the iPhone 7, shall we?
Sure.
So, first things first, the thing that everyone is going to notice, there is no headphone jack on this new iPhone. Some people are making this a bigger deal than it needs to be. Personally, I don't think it's a big deal at all. What do you think? You tell me what you think, and then I'll tell you how it is.
I think it's a regression.
Okay.
So, audio, listening to audio, is one of the few things we have right now that has a standard port. Every device that I have in my house right now probably has a 3.5 millimeter plug to put in headphones. It's standard. The only standard thing on an iPhone used to be a 3.5 millimeter headphone jack, and they remove it. Why? Apple apparently has the courage to remove it.
They do have the courage to remove it, and I think that's a positive thing.
That shows. But, and I don't prove them. I'm not saying they're wrong. I'm not going to say that wireless is not the future, because I believe it can be. But it isn't yet. It isn't here yet. If you look, like there's Bluetooth headsets around, but I think the quality of those are still debatable. I think their battery life could be improved. I have not switched to them yet because I think that wired still works better. And I think this in general is the case. Like the mobile market is not ready to switch to headphones yet. I think Apple is switching out too early. Like, what do they lose with their 3.5 millimeter plug? Now you have to fix it by using a longer cable. I don't see what they are really winning by taking it out. I mean,
All right. Can I tell you what they're winning by removing it?
Well, they're going to earn more money because people need to buy more adapters. People need to
buy...
Well,
not necessarily. Not necessarily.
People need to buy a charging stand if they want to listen to music and charge their phone at the same time.
But here's the thing. A number of things. First of all, the design video for the iPhone 7 specifically states that the goal of this iPhone was to simplify the enclosure as much as possible. And that means making it water-resistant and dust-resistant. That also means removing the physical home button and replacing it with a 3D touch sensor that gives you haptic feedback when you press on the button.
And that is cool.
Okay, that is. We'll get to
that. The home button is cool.
And that also then leads into removing the headphone jack. Because if you remove the headphone jack, that further simplifies the enclosure of this device. And now, here's the part that I think the vast majority of people out there are not understanding. And that is that when you hire a company like Apple and you have, you know, such a tremendous amount of goodwill with your customers that you can do actions like this. And, you know, this isn't even the biggest, you know, action that that Apple has taken in the past. Apple has, you know, removed compatibility when OS X first came out for OS 9 applications, and people didn't like that, but eventually they got around it. Apple also, you know, obsoleted numerous file systems in the past. Apple also persisted and insisted on having no flash on iOS, and look at where we are now. We're heading to a world all these years later where flash doesn't exist. Apple removed optical drives from their computers. We don't need those, they said. And now they're removing the headphone jack from their smartphones. And I think Apple is rightly predicting where the future is going to go with this. Now, the people out there who say that, oh, I need a headphone jack and I need to charge my phone at the same time. Sure, you could buy, you know, a stand from Apple for $40 that, you know, accomplishes that. Belkin has already put out a cable for $35 that can accomplish the same thing. It's effectively a lightning splitter that lets you plug the USB in and a headphone to listen and charge at the same time.
So that's like a splitter, and then you have to put an adapter
on it, yeah.
I mean, I have a MacBook at home, right? I have a drawer full of adapters for it, and it pisses me off so much.
I mean, that has always been the Apple experience, going way back, you know, to the 1990s with all the adapters that would come with those computers. It's not a, you know, it's not a foreign thing to be a part of the Apple ecosystem and use adapters. And I think that the PC world and in general, the people who were not with Apple in the 90s and early 2000s don't see this as a return to standard Apple practices.
But why? We have, so that's another thing, right? They want to replace everything with a single port. I can see this, right? I think that would be great in the future of mobile phones, except for there is already a standard like that, and it's called USB-C.
Yeah. And I mean, Apple could go to USB-C, and that would be seen as rectifying this entire problem, I think. Yes?
If... If Apple would have announced the iPhone 7 to have no jack, headphone jack, and Lightning port replaced with USB-C, I would have made less of a problem with it, to be honest. Because I have USB-C is a shared standard, and that would already make it a lot easier to get wired headphones for that wired port. But right now, you're limited to the Lightning port, and you
also...
But
is anyone surprised? Like...
No, we knew that Apple would be removing it for a year. The rumors were pretty obvious, but I guess this is a good point to point out that I don't think it's a good idea at all. I don't like it, and you say Apple has a lot of goodwill with the customers. they lost my goodwill when they brought out phones that were bigger than that fit in your hands. And now they removed their headphone jack. I don't see myself buying an iPhone again. The product has... I have lost all the interest in the product.
Well, I mean, the way I see it is that this is just effectively, you know, cementing in stone, or in this case, aluminum, what the future of the iPhone is going to be. It's going to be a device that is, you know, solid. It's going to be one piece, and there's going to be one port on it and a minimal number of buttons, which is in effect the definition of simplicity, which is what the definition of the iPhone 7 was. And in doing that, they have reached their core goals for the iPhone 7. The core goals of the iPhone 7 were not to, you know, bring in some revolutionary new feature, or, you know, compete with Samsung or Nokia or HTC or whatever smartphone out there. It was to make a statement that this is the future of smartphone design, much like they did when the original iPhone first came out. And I think they have accomplished that with this. And whether or not, you know, people care about this at the end of the day, these phones are going to sell. And I think that the vast majority of people out there who are going to an Apple store to check one of these devices out are not going to care that it doesn't have a headphone jack. I think you are in the minority of people that care about that. So I think it's a positive step forward.
I am not saying that the goal of going for simplicity in your phones or having even a single port on it is a bad idea. I mean, in phones, you can still make the point that you might at some point want to charge it and use it for something else at the same time. That is a point that you might want to make. So two ports would sort of be the bare minimum. But all right, let's say that Apple makes a decision to go with one. Completely fine with it. But why is it not USB-C? That's my first question. And if that
Apple's
is your
never
goal,
done that before.
Well, they should.
Well, it's never been in their DNA to do that.
I know. And the second is, this is just too early. The world is not ready yet for this.
For wireless headphones. And I will agree with that.
So what's going to happen right
Bluetooth.
Now? What is going to happen right now is this is gonna lead to problems with people who pick up this phone right now. In a year, or maybe even longer, maybe shorter, I don't know how fast these markets move, we might see people adopt ways to deal with this issue. And sure, we're gonna have solutions for this, but not right now. And sure, Apple has the courage to be the first and change this instead of waiting for the market to get ahead. But I don't, like, as the phone is right now, it has no feature really, except for the fancy new home button that really compels me to get one. And if you then look at the price, which is, by the way, ridiculous, it's more expensive than a reasonable desktop computer by now.
Yes, I mean, especially for you guys over in Europe.
It is like, I looked up the prices. The entry model is, what is it, 700, 800 euros?
Yeah.
That you can get, like, when I got my fancy gaming PC years ago, it was 800 euros. So I was hoping for something to make me go back to Apple, because I have been losing faith over them a bit, but I haven't found anything in the iPhone that makes me really compelled to go back to the brand. And I'm really hoping for something big next year for the 10-year anniversary of iPhone and hopefully the iPhone 8.
You know, this entire iPhone debacle with the headphone port has reasserted my faith in Apple as a hardware company. The software is still a little bit hit or miss, especially on the desktop, for being modern, But the fact that they do this and pull it off so well is something that I'm really proud of, and I wish Jagex would do this as well sometimes. But with that being said...
I mean, you say your faith is restored, right?
Yeah, and the hardware, absolutely.
I was curious because before the meeting, the keynote actually happened, I found out that the most interesting way to find out how a keynote went is to look at stock prices right after the keynote meeting.
Sure.
They are dropping.
Well, I mean, that could also be from the fact that smartphones are so advanced that they're effectively commodities nowadays. And
possibly.
And there's nothing really groundbreaking aside from this that can be announced. I mean, what else is there to announce on a smartphone?
But, like, the rate at which Apple stock is dropping is significantly higher since the keynote. There's, like, a tiny bump and then a huge plummet right after it. So, I don't know. There is so little about Apple these days that really makes me excited about their products.
Well, I mean, it's obviously going to come down to the sales numbers at the end of the day, which they said they won't release because the demand will outpace supply for the first run, which is understandable. But with that being said, I think that look at the next quarter and see how this is doing, and that will be all the evidence we need. And like I started off with this, you cannot have more of a failure than having your phones explode and cause people's cars and houses to catch on fire. So if the iPhone 7 doesn't do that, it will be successful. Can we at least agree on that?
I mean, I do remember having like a callback actions on iPhones as well, and everybody seems to have forgotten about that.
But none
that.
Of them exploded, though.
So I would be interested in seeing in half a year how many people actually still worry about the Note 7 exploding. How many people still care about the iPhone 7 not having a headphone jack?
There you go. And I think that both of these scenarios, the Note 7 one included, are minor blips, and in a half a year we will have forgotten about them. And that leads me to the next question I would like to ask is, what if a company like Samsung or HTC did this as a selling point to their phone, removing the headphone jack and going all in with USB-C on a flagship device? What if they did that? Would the reaction be as universally negative? That's a question I would like to ask everyone out there. It's an interesting question, isn't it?
It is. I think it depends entirely on how the iPhone 7 is going to work out. That there is no saying how that's going to work. Maybe iPhone 7, maybe Apple made the right call here. Maybe this is going to work out. And when people are going to stop dropping their iPhone or headphone jacks, people are going to be like, well, they're copying Apple. Apple was right all along.
Yep.
And maybe the headphone thing does not work out and the other phones will keep using it. And if they drop it, they will be like, oh, why are they so stupid and following Apple's mistakes?
Yeah. And two final things before we move on to the AirPods. But I think that if you look at the iPhone 7 and about where it's going and what's in the box, you get pair of lightning connected standard Apple headphones, which plug into the lightning port, but you also get a lightning to 3.5 millimeter adapter that you can use for any old pair of headphones that you have. So if you have a pair of headphones you like, you will be able to use them no problem with your iPhone 7. And if you lose that adapter, it'll cost you a grand total of $9 to replace. And lots of people seem to be forgetting that point as well.
I thought Apple, almost said Jagex again there. I thought Apple would not include the adapter. I'm so happy they do. It has made the whole blow a bit less.
Exactly, and that's why I think it's a non-issue. And if it were not for the size of the device, I still prefer the smaller phone size. If it were not for the size of the device, I would be jumping up and down with this release, because one of the things I said a number of months ago that I wanted is I want an iPhone with no buttons on the front. And lo and behold, there's no button on the front.
You get this phone, right? You get this phone. What headphones would you use with it?
I would use the standard headphones because I don't listen to music.
And you would use the adapter?
Well, I would just use the Lightning connected headphones.
Oh, they're actually Lightning connected.
Yeah, there's a Lightning connected pair of headphones in the box and the adapter.
All right, fair.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But following from that, there's something called the Apple AirPods, which will be released at the end of October, and that's Apple's foray into wireless headphones. $159 USD.
$200 for something you're going to lose in the, like, everywhere.
Yeah, and all right, before we get too far down the line of saying that, oh, this is an overpriced Apple garbage and all that other stuff like that.
Yeah, I'm glad that you're saying it, because I completely agree with that.
All right, but we need to remember that a number of years ago, Apple bought Beats Audio, which is the king of overpriced headphone garbage. So with that being said, Apple has effectively used Beats Audio marketing to come up with their own pair of headphones here that are more than headphones, believe it or not. These headphones actually have wireless chips in them that each communicate remotely with your device. They also have accelerometers to know when you're moving and when you put them in the ears so that when they're muted. And they also have the ability so that when they're tapped on, so you can just tap them, they have the ability to answer phone calls and hang up on phone calls as well. So they're not just headphones. They are advanced wireless headphones.
I mean, they are cool. They sound futuristic. They also sound a tiny bit gimmicky. And I stay with my previous point. They are so impractical. The tiny little thing. Have you ever held up your own earphones and seen how small the actual parts you stick in your ear are?
Oh, yeah. And, of course, the question is, are they going to, you know, sit in the ear and make sure that they don't fall out?
I mean, I think they changed the shape so they fit better in your ears. But when they're in your ear and they fall out, you're probably going to notice. But how long before one of your earpods like falls between the gap between the platform and the train and the station? Or like, what if it was just under a couch at home? I think this is going to happen all the time, especially when putting them in and out. I think it's so impractical.
You don't want to lose one of these given the price. So
no, you don't. It's like,
and there's no wire connecting them either, unlike standard Bluetooth headphones. So there's that as well.
It's $100 each. You don't want to lose these, and I think they are a bit of a gimmick,
yeah,
to be honest.
And I mean, I'm going to say that for everyone who says that the iPhone 7 is, you know, stupid because it doesn't have a headphone port and they don't include wireless headphones, these are not the wireless headphones that are designed to be included with the iPhone 7. These are a premium product that is a technology statement, much like the first MacBook Air was a technology statement.
Yeah.
So with that being said, I don't think it's reasonable to expect anyone out there of sane mind right now to go out and pick up a set of AirPods just to have a set of wireless headphones for their device unless they know that they're actually going to fit in their ear and not lose them, because that's the biggest attractor with these and the standard Apple headphones is that they always seem to be falling out. I don't know if you've noticed that.
I have never found them comfortable to wear them for a long time in general.
So
that's my issue with them.
You know, what I think Apple should have done, in addition to releasing the AirPods, is included a set of standard Bluetooth-connected Apple earphones with the iPhone 7 in the box.
Yes, I was just about to say, like, Apple wants to move forward the market by saying, hey, wireless headphones are the thing. But then the actual headphones, wireless headphones they come out with, are premium product. And what's in the case? Well, the adapter and wired headphones. And I think if they really want to start moving to that wireless thing, they should show faith in it, show that they want to adopt it, and include something.
Yeah, and I mean, the reason I think they didn't is because Apple is the company that doesn't do something unless they can do it elegantly, and something tells me that a wire connecting to headphones is not elegant for Apple. So
yeah, I guess in this case they decided to go with style over practicality.
Which happens all the time. There's a device out there called the Magic Mouse that does that.
Dear. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not surprising, but at the end of the day, I think that everything here is being drastically overblown.
So, yeah. Is the removal of the headphone port also a stalled decision over practicality?
No.
I think it is.
I think it's a case to move forward with a much more compact design.
I think we completely disagree on that point.
Well, we'll see we'll see what happens in the year with other smartphone makers out there. Other news from this event, the Apple Watch Series 2 is an updated Apple Watch with GPS and a faster chip in it. But what Apple has also done is they've updated the old Apple Watch to have the same dual-core chip in it. So all Apple Watches that you buy from Apple now are faster than they were previously. So you only really need the Series 2 if you need GPS and you're going out for a run or a bike ride or something like that and you don't want to take your phone with you. I think that's the only time that you need the Series 2.
I have not really noticed high adoption rate on Apple Watches, personally.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still not entirely convinced that it's a device that's needed when you have a phone that you can, you know, just whip out right out of your pocket and see what's up on the notification screen. So,
I mean, I know of some people that prefer to keep their phone in their handbags.
Right.
In that case, watch, like a smartwatch that's linked to your phone, all of a sudden becomes a lot more practical. But even then, I don't think it is really a necessary device.
Yeah. And I mean, I think maybe in a number of years, we might get down to a wearable that we actually need, but I think it's still in kind of the category where it's not needed. Right. But that all could change with certain segments of the market, because it also was announced at the Apple event that Pokemon Go is coming to the Apple Watch.
Cool.
So you could use that as a way of tracking Pokemon, which I think would be really neat. Other Apple news from this week, iOS 10 launches on Tuesday, the 13th of September, and macOS Sierra launches 1 week later on the 20th of September for those of you guys out there who use macOS. And just as a bit of a reminder to those of you guys looking to upgrade to iOS 10, the iOS 10 is supposedly compatible with devices that are the iPhone 5 and newer, but as with the standard Apple recommendations, I would not recommend that you run the latest version of iOS on the oldest hardware it says is acceptable. So that's, of course, the iPhone 5 and the 5C. I don't think it would be a good idea to put iOS 10 on that device.
I'm probably going to try, but we'll see how.
Yeah, you have 30 days to go back if you don't like it.
All right.
Because what happens is Apple will stop signing iOS 9 after that time, so you won't be able to install it again.
So, just as I get used to saying OS 10, they're going to change it to macOS.
Yeah, macOS Sierra.
And then they're going to call the new iOS version iOS 10. So, this is going to be a very confusing year.
Yeah, and, you know, we need to kind of get away from saying OS 10, and I think that that makes sense because it's been OS 10 since 2001. You might as well just call it macOS now. There's so much stuff going on under the hood that it's changed a lot since version 10.
I'm really happy that they have changed that. finally.
Yeah, I'm also glad now that people can't make fun of OS X for calling it OS X because of the Roman numeral, which we all know is a 10.
Yeah, so that's what I was referring to. I just learned to say OS X sort of reliably, and now they're going to change it again. So I've already tried to start using macOS.
Yeah, same.
In many cases. And people know what you're talking about, so
yep.
Good choice there.
All right. Well, that's enough of Apple discussion for this week.
One more rant is that they
got
rid of the 32 gigabytes iPhone version.
You mean the 16 gig?
No, the 32.
No, the standard now is the standard for iPhone 7 is 32.
Are you sure?
Yeah, it is. They got rid of the 16 gig. Yep.
I where? Why did I have an annoying website? Just give me the phones.
Yep, they're standard 32, 128, and 256 now.
Oh, the 64, that's what I was talking about.
The 64, right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think 32 is enough. What do you think?
No.
No?
No, I also use mine as like audio thing. I have a lot of music.
Okay.
And 128 is a lot. And it's really expensive. And 64 is such a nice in-between thing. I think I have a 32 right now, and it's just too small. And the 64 is a nice in-between size. I didn't get...
You can get a 64 gig iPhone SE. That got a price cut.
All right. But, yeah. That's,
I kind of got you there for a minute, didn't I?
Yeah.
Well, I think that's where you'll end up. But all right, you ready to talk about Sony?
Well, after Apple and JAGEX, I'm going to go Sony. Sure.
Okay. So this week, Sony announced the PS4 Pro, which is a follow-up to this current version of the PS4 and the PS4 Slim. The PS4 Pro will launch this November, and it's going to have a 1 terabyte hard drive and double the GPU power of the current PS4. So basically that means that this is going to be Sony's next major step in the PlayStation 4 console market, because it'll also support 4K, but oddly it will not have a 4K Blu-ray player, which is a little bit odd considering Sony and Blu-ray are created by the same company. But this launches November 10th of 2016, and it'll pretty much replace all the existing PS4s out there on the market. Now, you know, ordinarily this wouldn't be a huge story, but Microsoft has already done that with the Xbox One S that came out last month, and then Microsoft also has a supercharged Xbox coming out next year in the nickname of Project Scorpio. So what this effectively does is that it confirms that consoles, both from Sony and Microsoft, are moving to the cell phone-like distribution cycle of once every 2 to 3 years, there will be a spec increase while maintaining backwards compatibilities for all your games.
So what I'm wondering is, for PCs, there's often the possibility of completely altering your graphics settings.
Yeah.
So, like if you have a PC game and you play it on a high-end gaming computer, you're going to be able to make it run smoother and look nicer than if you would play it on a mediocre PC.
Right.
Consoles, on the other hand, are more like, you either have the console or you don't. So you plug in the game and it runs, or it doesn't run, in which case you should probably go back and get your money back. So now you have like these tiers of devices. So what are you going to get out of getting a PS4 Pro? Okay, it's going to maybe run slightly smoother. It's going to
be in 4K.
It's going to be in 4K. But if game developers want to take full advantage of that, they can't really support the back-end ability as well, or they have to do some settings menu as well. I do not know how that's going to work out.
Because it would have to be device-specific settings, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Like, if it detects on a PS4 Pro, it's going to run on Mac settings.
Yeah.
If it's going to run on any other PS4, it's going to run at half the settings and half the resolution.
Yeah. So that, all right. But that means that, for example, you all of a sudden have to start offering different texture resolutions
yep.
with your game.
Yep.
So this is going to change the way game developers have to work with consoles.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And
like, right now, console game development is quite easy. It either runs or it doesn't. Like, you have your own PS4. If it runs on your PS4, it's going to run on all PS4s. But once you start having these different configurations, that all of a sudden becomes a lot harder to test.
But just remember that there's only going to be two or three of these at a given time that you have to test for.
Yeah.
So it's not like...
The entry step is so higher for, say, an indie developer. They won't have...
Okay, that's true. I understand where you're coming from now that you mentioned the indie developers.
But still, it's going to make... This is huge impact on the console gaming development. Like this new
yeah, it's a major site. Shift for what they're being asked to do. And, you know, I think the fact that both Microsoft and Sony are doing it means that the game developers have no choice but to go along with it.
Yeah, I mean, that is true. You go with it or you're out. But whether the game developers like this, I think this is a customer-friendly way of dealing with this.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Because,
I mean, you buy an Xbox One in 2013 when it first comes out. We're heading into 2016 right now, and there's new games coming out. And you're not going to replace, you know, a console that you spent $400 or $500 on 3 years later. That just doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
So in a way, it's good they're doing it. It's kind of like buying a smartphone. If you buy a smartphone 1 year, you're going to get the updated version and you're going to have those capabilities. But if you have one that's a few more years old, you're still going to be able to reap most of the benefits that come with the platform, I think.
Yeah. The issue is, like, right now... You are a few years into a console cycle. You don't want to go and buy a free old device anymore.
That's right.
You
that's
don't
right.
do that.
And that's why they're doing this.
And I think it's good. I think it's going to be really interesting to see where this is going for the relationship between console games and game developers. And whether that we are going to see game developers that say, well, you need a PS4 Pro to play this game because we don't support the original
version.
No, I don't
think they can do that.
The problem is that console games are really curated. So Sony says, yes, you can release this, or you can't. And that might not have this development happen. But there's definitely going to be some shifts in how game companies are going to deal with this. And I think it's interesting to keep an eye on that.
Yeah, indeed. And, I mean, at the end of the day, all we need to do is look at what Microsoft's grand plan is, the fact that you're going to be able to, you know, play your game on your Xbox and your PC, the original Xbox One, the One S, and Project Scorpio when it comes out next year. And that just shows you how far invested Microsoft is in this solution. And I think Sony has no choice but to follow. So, anyways, I believe... That's it for Sony. We can move on to our last tech news or somewhat related tech news story of the week, if that's all right with you.
Well, because it's you, I'll let you.
Okay, sounds good to me. All right, so 50 years ago on Thursday, September 8th, 1966 was the premiere of the original Star Trek on NBC. Back then, I think it wasn't really known how much of an impact this series would have on the world and its followers. But here we are, 50 years later, Star Trek celebrating a huge anniversary with one blockbuster movie released this year and a new series being released in January, I think shows that there's no sign of Star Trek waning in popular culture these days. If anything, we're on the up once again, and it really is quite a special thing for a franchise to last 50 years with so many actors, so many fans, and so many unique messages that can come from this kind of science fiction. I think it's just a really special thing that it has lasted as long as it has, and everyone who watches it gets something completely different out of it. And there, I think, is one common theme to it, is that it is a world that we would all like to be a part of, and those of us who watch it sometimes do our own thing to move the world in that direction. So 50 years and the adventure continues is the official wording from CBS, who currently owns the Star Trek product. So I'm really happy about this as a landmark. I know you enjoy the series as well, so anything you'd like to say on this?
Well, I'm still working my way through them. There's a lot of Star Trek over the years, of course. But yeah, what is really interesting is the way it stays actual. Like, if you look at things, I'm the Next Generation came out in the years around my own birth, and if you look at it, there's no feeling of things being outdated or not relevant anymore.
It's like aged really well.
It has aged really well. And what I also think is really important is the way how Star Trek is really ahead of its time, in not only in like technology, but also in addressing things like diversity and equality and that kind of stuff. And if you look at how, well, let's say Hollywood or the entire film industry is still treating things these days, and if you compare that to Star Trek, like 20 years ago, they were still, they're years ahead. And that makes me really happy of Star Trek as well. Like, they have this whole ideological world almost, but it's not just an empty ideological world, because the entire series has some sort of air around it that it's really inclusive, and that makes me really happy and really proud to be part of, well, I would say the Star Trek family. But yeah,
I think you are. I think we all are.
So that, I think that is a great thing about Star Trek. And if you keep that, like if you take that as an extra layer on top of what is actually being shown, I think that adds a lot of it. And if we would all just take a tiny bit of what they try to achieve and try to apply that in our own lives, I think that would be a good thing. And yeah, so this is the thing that has worked both technologically, right? Star Trek predicted the iPad, basically.
Yep. Let's in 1987.
And I think that Star Trek is also predicting certain sociological, would you call them like that?
Yeah.
Sociological changes.
Which ones do you have in mind?
Oh, especially in terms of like equality. So a really weird example I tend to use is that in TNG, you can see in one shot that's actually used in two different episodes, you can see a male crew member walking around in a dress, and nobody thinks it's weird, because why would dresses be limited to one gender, right? And this sounds really weird, but there's signals like this throughout the entire series.
Yeah, and you know, that brings me back to a Gene Roddenberry quote with Patrick Stewart when The Next Generation started. Patrick Stewart said, you'd think they would have cured baldness by the 24th century, and Gene Roddenberry said, no, they wouldn't, because no one cares.
Yeah, that's the same thing, and there is also the fact that Voyager has a female captain has inspired so many women. I've heard stories about how Captain, I don't even know her name. How bad? Help me out here.
One of the women on the International Space Station, right?
No, I mean the actual captain from Star Trek. Captain Janeway?
Yeah, Janeway was Voyager.
She has inspired a lot of people, women I've known. She was a role model. So I think that's amazing. The new movie, Beyond, treats a gay relationship as if it's normal. That kind of stuff, it's just in there and nobody cares, and I think that's great. And I hope That is indeed where we are as a humanity also going.
And see, I'd just like to make a point about that. You know, so many movies and actors, you know, like to make a big deal about certain social changes that have happened in, you know, the last 15 to 20 years here in North America. And, you know, in Star Trek Beyond, you have those similar changes happening, and they're just there. And I think a large portion of the population who are around today would be perfectly fine if these kind of relationships and changes were portrayed in other movies and, you know, in the world as if they are in Star Trek. And I don't think mm-hmm. it would be a big deal. They make it a big deal when these things are artificially hyped up, but when they're just there, it's fine. It just slips right in.
And that's what makes me so proud of, like, the entire air that's around Star Trek. Like, people think it's all right, and it is all right, in my opinion. So that's just part of the ideology that's around Star Trek. And I think that's part of what has made it still alive these days. I think it's part of it.
Yeah, and you know another great thing about it that, you know, you can take away from practically almost every episode of Next Generation and all the series is that it's not about necessarily running into a problem and blowing things to bit. It's about, you know, using science, diplomacy, finding a way to talk through it rather than, you know, just going through what would be create the best action sequence, which, you know... I think that the new movies kind of forgot about for a bit, but are on the right track to fix. So
it's having values and then actually using those values to solve issues instead of just throwing them away the moment some problem arises.
Yes, and you know I think that is what made Star Trek different in the 1960s, and that's what makes it different today from all the other science fiction out there, and that's why we need
Star Trek is
in movie format and TV format.
Star Trek is not about exploring space; it's about exploring humanity.
There you go. That's the best way of putting it. And you know, this is that actually was highlighted in The Next Generation, so you hit the nail right on the head. So that's pretty much all I got to say about this, but if you have not watched Star Trek, I would highly recommend that at 50 years in you guys take a look at it. If anyone needs a good starting point, just let me know and I'll tell you where you can begin without requiring too much knowledge, too much lore knowledge, backstory wise. So
We're all very, very excited about January 2017.
Yes, Star Trek Discovery.
I'm so looking forward to that.
Yeah, the speculation is running wild, and you know it didn't really sink in for me at the beginning about what it could be about. But you know, Tholians in Star Trek have always used asteroid bases, which might be something related to the new series. We'll just have to wait and see. But
yeah. And there are already great signals that diversity and all that stuff is going to be a big role again in the new series. So they're definitely still true to the philosophy.
All right. Well, I think we can move on to other things. Sound good?
Sounds great.
So our skill of the month update, the magic skill of the month for September. We have Super Clank in first place with 8.8 million XP, nearly 10 times the amount of experience that our second place competitor has, Parnassius, with 839,000, and Jaden in third place with 317,000 XP gained. So, yeah, lots of XP gained. But there is still a double XP weekend coming this month, so I'm not writing anything off. But, yeah, that's a rather impressive amount of XP. And I will take this time to remind everyone that even if you don't, you know, come in first place in the competition, you do still have a chance at the end of the year to win something based on how well you do. So, for example, if you come in first place here, but you... don't necessarily win, or second place, but you don't necessarily win, you'll still get a number of points going forward for our end of the year competition. So there is still reason to, you know, try and do well, get in the top five, and maybe win our end of year competition. So, all right. We do have an achievement of the week this week, and Superclank got 99 invention on September 7th. And it's fair to also mention that Superclank is the same person who is running away with our magic skill of the month currently. So congratulations on 99 invention. That's always a great one to see. All right. Ready for pick of the week?
I am totally ready for your pick of the week.
All right. Well, to keep on the general trend of Star Trek 50th anniversary, this pick of the week is the quintessential online source for anything Star Trek canon related, and that is the Memory Alpha Wiki. This is basically a wiki that contains pretty much anything you could want to know about Star Trek, and it has to be canonical for it to appear on this wiki. If you're after non-canonical stuff, there's somewhere else that's called Memory Beta, but today we're focusing on Memory Alpha. And basically, if you want to know more about a certain episode, background info about any of the stuff like that, you can just head on over to that episode page, pick up some information there, and there's all the information that you could have ever wanted to know about that. There's also information on here about how certain things work, how warp drive works, how the transporters work. Pretty much anything you want to know about Star Trek you can find on Memory Alpha. It's a free online encyclopedia for all things Star Trek related, which at 50 years in, there's lots of stuff to talk about and look up.
I'm always really interested in like how the actual universe around the series is, like actual background stories, and how did the world get to this point. And all this information is encoded within Star Trek, but this information is often scattered around lots of episodes. So it's really difficult to get a good source, good story out of it. But here you can just go to a website, look up a certain topic, and read through the entire thing. It tells you everything and even like adds references to the episodes where it was discussed. And I am still on my first watching through all the Star Trek things. But regularly, after an episode, I want to look something up. I can't look it up. It's really interesting, and I really enjoy having this as an additional source to watching Star Trek. So even if you're planning on starting to watch it, I definitely recommend keeping this website in mind. And if you find anything interesting in the series, just look it up and just be careful you don't spoil yourself, because that's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, they have a complete rundown here of the 21st century. So if you want to see what happened in the 2010s in the Star Trek universe, you can do that. Or the fact that in the Star Trek universe, World War III ended in 2053. So there's all kinds of information listed there. You can even go further to the far distant future, like the 31st century, and see where all that information has come from. And if you want to see the entire timeline, they do have pages for that as well. So it's a really great resource. Like for example, 31st century, you can see some of the temporal stuff that happened and all the really interesting things about time travel that's touched on in Enterprise and Voyager to a lesser degree. So,
I think it is one of the best, if not the best, fan-based or fan-maintained resources I've ever seen.
Yeah, out there. And you know, they actually use data from Memory Alpha to build up a certain story point in Star Trek Beyond. The two head administrators of Memory Alpha were contacted by Simon Pegg, who said, "I need a mineral that comes from the planet Vulcan for the new movie. What can you get me?" So within a day, they went through all of Memory Alpha and basically figured out and created a new metal based on, you know, canonical sources that would have existed on Vulcan, and lo and behold, that made it into Star Trek Beyond. So
it's really amazing. And just the amount of detail that's like, there's the episode which has the description, but just the amount of detail that goes in how it was filmed, what happened, how it was received,
location shoots, if they did that as well.
Yeah, it is. There is so much detail that has been many, many man hours to get that to work. So,
yeah, like especially the episode summaries are just really extensive. So, you can find that at memoryalpha.org, I believe, or memoryalpha.wikia.com. But of course, full links will be in the show notes, update.rsbnb.com. So, Memory Alpha, great source. Alrighty, so what have you been up to this week, Sirion?
I have had quite an eventful week, to be honest. So I finished a beach, like I said, finally, because I have been ill. So I was home having Netflix on and just clicking away at the beach. Got the outfit. Has weird blue things that you can't recolor. So I'm probably not going to stick with it, but... Well, there you go. I have that. But last weekend, I was also invited to a trip to Virago. I was like, well, I need the music track, so why not? That was literally my only motivation. But yeah, I died. I died again. Then I stopped dying. And finally, Virago started dying. So we got 3 kills, I think, in total. So yeah, that was quite a lot of fun to do, but yeah, especially during these boss fights, just you notice how the combat system sometimes doesn't want to work with you, and one of my deaths was just RuneScape not responding to my controls. Like, I think the second death was caused by tick rate, so there you go. But yeah. Otherwise, with the beach behind, I am slowly starting to chip away at invention again.
You doing fishvention?
No. So what I have done, actually, is because I have most of my skills 99, I have disabled almost all of them, except for divination and woodcutting and mining. So whenever I get one of those, I can just do like a small portion of upgrading my items with some item XP. And yeah, if you do your daily every day, you slowly start building up things in the background. It doesn't really feel like a chore because it's different every day what you do.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So I've been doing that. I'm aware that it's not the best experience rates, but it keeps the variation in. And I do it next to like daily slayer tasks and such. So I'm not really focusing on getting the best invention experience rates because I don't want to turn it into a grind. I want to like do a bit of everything.
Yeah, and I think that's the number one way to play RS is to not make it a grind.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Anything else interesting?
No, not really. I mean, I have finally been to the Star Trek movie last week. I really enjoyed that.
You know what part I was referencing now that was used by Memory Alpha?
No.
Oh, okay, I'll tell you after what it was. Sure. To avoid spoilers.
But yeah, the entire movie was quite silly. I had some real laughs in the cinema there. So I was happy to see that. And it made me forget the Into Darkness bit.
We want to forget that one.
Yeah, this was a great second new Star Trek movie. Let's keep it at that.
There you go. Alrighty, well, as for me this week, I oddly made some profit on Herblore potions. You don't normally hear that. I made profit with Super Prayer Renewals.
Ah, cool.
Yeah, I have no idea why that's the case, but I did. So that was happy times. But yeah, aside from that, you know, just trying to find ways to, you know, train Herblore without breaking the bank. So that's pretty much all I've been up to on RS. Usual farming runs here and there. I did start on the path of gathering some harmonic dust in order to get crystal pickaxes. You know, I don't have one, so I thought might as well get one now that they're augmentable, right?
I used to have one, but I want to have a second one.
Yeah.
Just like my hatchet, I want one on my tool belt. And
one to wield. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, part of me doesn't want to train mining until the mining and smithing rework comes out.
I get it. I'm already 99 mining, so I don't care that much. But, I can see your point.
Yeah. So that's in my mind. But aside from that, you know, not too much else this week on RS. I debated starting up Invention again, but we'll see.
No skidding fat for Herbler yet?
No, not yet. Not yet.
No PKing in the wilderness yet?
Nope, that's not going to be happening. No.
Okay, well, good.
No. But funny story, when I was on my herb run yesterday, the war bands appeared right at the herb patch. but thankfully, everyone else was occupied with their war bands, and they weren't looking to get me, and they were all just, you know, worried about running straight out of the wilderness and looting all their supplies. It literally appeared right north of the herb patch. So that was funny, hoping to get out of there without being killed. But
sounds like a good story.
Yeah, it was. I didn't die, so it wasn't as good as it could have been. But aside from that, I don't think there's much else to say.
No, I think we were able to fill the episode quite well with Jagex Apple Star Trek.
Yeah. You won't be here next week.
No, I won't be. It's the Runefest weekend as well, yeah. Of course. I'll be visiting family.
Yeah, you'll be visiting family, and I will not be doing what I did last year, and that is doing 4 hours of podcasting on Runefest Day. Our tentative plan right now is to record on Saturday and have it released on the same day after Runefest. We will be discussing the majority of what's coming in 2017. Then we're going to split the rest of the time evenly between the rest of 2016, Combat, and whatever patch notes come out next week. So that's what next week's episode is going to look like. So you can start thinking about your questions for that if we have time for them. But if we do good questions, of course, we will make time. Remember, if you want to send those in, email us questions at rsbnb.com or leave us a direct message on Twitter at rsbnb. Aside from that, if you want to chat with us, I'm always in our friends chat, Bits Bytes, in-game. Lots of great people hang out there, so come by and say hello, come visit us. And I believe that's it for this week. Anything else?
No, you had a great summary there.
Yep. All right. Well, then, thank you, everybody, for sharing your time with us, and we will see you all next week.
Or in 2 weeks.